The Office of Special Counsel unexpectedly withdrew a proposed rule that would have expanded the whistleblower rights of federal contractors. But one expert says that's not necessarily a bad thing. David Colapinto is general counsel for the National Whistleblower Center and a partner with the law firm of Cohen, Cohen, Colapinto. He tells executive editor Jason Miller about why OSC's proposed rule missed the mark and what Congress needs to do to fix federal contractor whistleblower protections.
We were pleased that they did withdraw and if they may reconsider, but we had raised concerns because the way the rule was proposed, it was confusing and also potentially could have put federal contracting employees who work for contractors that provide services to agencies that are part of the intelligence community could have put them at risk of discipline or even potentially criminal prosecution, because what the OSC was proposing with respect to those employees really wasn't, it kind of contradicted what Congress had said in 2012. And what I mean by that is that contractor employees for the federal government generally have had better rights than federal employees to protect them from retaliation for blowing the whistle. One exception to that is in 2012, Congress took away the rights of employees to blow the whistle on federal contractors who provide services in the intelligence community. So you could be prosecuted for disclosing classified information or information that is part of the intelligence community, if they deemed it protected, if you disclosed it to the wrong place. And we saw nothing in the law that provided OSC the authority to allow them to receive this information.
Okay, so that was the biggest concern. Not so much that contractors would or wouldn't have the ability or subcontractors to file complaints, but it's just this one provision is what you were really worried about.
Well, that was one of the concerns. The other concern we had was for all other federal employee contracts, they already have whistleblower protections that are better than anything that OSC could provide under this rule. The only thing this rule would have allowed OSC to do is to receive whistleblower disclosures. They would then look into it. They would send it on to the agency, receive a comment, etc. But really, OSC would be powerless to take any corrective action on their own. Under existing law, federal contracting employees can already go to the inspector generals of the various agencies that oversee those contracts and report any problems that they have. So that was a concern that it could cause confusion. It could also interfere with employee rights of federal contractors to file complaints under the False Claims Act. That is a very complex law and provides a potential monetary recovery for a federal contractor employee if their employer is engaging in fraud against the government. And many of the complex rules related to the False Claims Act, the employee could be put at risk of losing a False Claims Act case if they were just simply to go to OSC and make a disclosure without thinking this through. So we thought that there were problems with the rule itself that would have created confusion, and for national security employees, certainly could have potentially put them at jeopardy.
That's a great explanation of kind of your the two big areas. Why do you think OSC in the first place put the rule out?
It was well-intentioned. It was an effort to fill a hole or a gap in coverage for employees, particularly with respect to the intelligence community contracting employees. Everybody may remember Ed Snowden. When he came forward, this exclusion from the law protecting employees who are federal contractors for whistleblowing, that exclusion had already been passed. So what OSC was looking at was, here's a whole group of federal contracting employees who work in the intelligence community, and where can they really go? They were trying to expand places where employees like Ed Snowden could go to report wrongdoing. I think that was one of the intents behind the rule. Unfortunately, when you look at the statute that was passed by Congress in 2012 that created this exclusion, it was at odds with what OSC was trying to do.
When I reached out to OSC for comment, they said, here's the link to all the comments we received. We have no plans to relook at this. So this may be a moot point now, but are there still gaps that you guys see for federal contractors, subcontractors?
Oh, absolutely. The huge gap is in the area of employees who are working for federal contractors that provide services to the intelligence community. That is the biggest gap that exists in coverage. All other employees, and you got to remember, prior to 2012, the law provided protections for people who worked for contractors of intelligence community agencies. Congress actually took it away for why. There was no explanation as to why they did it. You can't seriously believe that fraud and other wrongdoing does not go on at these contractors, that somehow fraud disappears from the equation when somebody is performing services for the intelligence community. It just doesn't make any sense. So, you know, why would Congress take away those types of rights, which exist for all other employees? Really, the whistleblower protections for federal contracting employees really meet the gold standard of legal protections, except for intelligence community employees.
From a civilian agency perspective, you know, non-intelligence, are there other gaps that you guys would like to see filled around whistleblower protections?
There are several laws that provide federal employee contractors really what I would call the gold standard of protections. Not only are you allowed to report the wrongdoing, whether it's being wrongdoing committed by the federal government that they observe while working on a federal contract, or more importantly, I think, the wrongdoing by the contractor, which often costs the taxpayer money. There are lots of laws that protect the right not only to disclose that, but in some circumstances to even seek a share of a monetary reward if, you know, they have actually been ripping off the government.
You know, it's interesting, the False Claims Act, I've been following this over the last, you know, 6-7 years, specifically the Obama administration has been very aggressive in prosecuting these cases, these False Claims Act cases, and have brought back, you know, billions of dollars based on these claims. Some people believe it's maybe even gotten out of hand. Maybe, you know, contractors are being unfairly targeted for mistakes rather than purposeful attempts to defraud the government. Do you think there's some clarification needed on the False Claims Act?
No. In fact, I think that if anything, fraud is being under prosecuted. And the complaints by the companies that have been hit with these types of these large verdicts, the reason you get large settlements is not because there was some mistake that was made. It's because there was clear evidence of wrongdoing and fraud at the expense of the U.S. taxpayer. These are very difficult cases to prove. To get to the point where the government is going to intervene in that case or a court is going to get involved and actually support a whistleblower claim saying there's been violations of the False Claims Act, there are so many hurdles that the whistleblower has to clear, and there are so many safeguards for the employers in those cases. There's heightened pleading standards. You know, you have to plead the fraud with specificity. These are not just mere allegations of mistakes. These are really the cases that you read about where there have been large recoveries are really large, massive scale fraud that has been going on at the expense of the taxpayer.
I think that's a great explanation, because a lot of people see companies like Oracle or Booz Allen or whomever, you know, pick your contractor. Almost every contractor, it seems like, has faced a False Claims Act lawsuit and has paid some kind of settlement. And they say, you know, why is the government so aggressive on it? But I think your discussion of it's very difficult to prove and there's a lot of hurdles for the whistleblower. It's not just a one and done, you know, you did it, yes, done, move on. I think that's helpful, because a lot of people look at this on the surface and not understand all the pieces and parts.
The whistleblowers are the major source of information to prove these fraud cases. It's not inspector general audits. It's not internal compliance. In the cases where corporations have internal compliance programs, most of the information they're getting is from whistleblowers inside the company. And that's, I think, really has helped strengthen the oversight and make companies more compliant. You read about the large verdicts, but it's like every time you see a Volkswagen case or you see USIS, for example, the security clearance company that was recently had to settle. These are examples that are big red flag warnings and lessons learned for other contractors, and ultimately help improve the way business is done and protect the taxpayer in the future.
David Colapinto is general counsel for the National Whistleblower Center and a partner with the law firm of Cohen, Cohen, Colapinto. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends.